Hey, Rachel.
Hey, Ryan.
How are you?
Doing good.
That's good to hear. So for you, you're doing good. Am I doing good? Maybe. I don't know. I'm here talking about Star Trek Discovery with you, so I'm feeling fantastic, Rachel. I'm feeling yum-yum, if anything.
I'm worried now.
The instant disdain on your face. So we are the Yum Yum Podcast. This is our show, Yum Yum Trek. Obviously, we adopted the name Yum Yum from the iconic famous line of dialogue from season 2, the final episode of the television series Star Trek Discovery. We've said this many times before, but I just use this part of the show, Rachel, the intro of the show, as an excuse just to remind us all how great that line of dialogue is. It's right up there with Shakespeare. Shakespeare wished that he wrote Yum Yum, and I often wonder what Schindler's List would have been like with this line of dialogue, but thankfully Star Trek, and not just old Star Trek, but Star Trek Discovery, Star Trek for the new generation, maybe the next, some might say, gave us that iconic line, so we, of course, had to adopt it, had to embrace the yum yum. So we are doing our Star Trek Discovery rewatch. This whole podcast is us going episode by episode. It's our rewatching of the show for the first time since it's aired. So, of course, we'll be discussing this with spoilers for the entire show. So if this episode relates to episodes in season 2, we're going to talk about that. So there you go. And we may talk about previous Star Treks, obviously, because Star Trek Discovery isn't Star Trek for people who haven't seen it before. It's for people who have seen it before, except for it's also not for those people. It's for people who have never seen Star Trek before. This show is an enigma to me. Rachel?
Yes?
Do you want to know what episode we watched?
I do know, but I would love to hear the title again and the description IMDb provides.
It's episode 6. I forgot. I thought it was episode 7 already.
Of season 1.
Of season 1. It came out in 2017. Mm-hmm. Oh, what an innocent year. And this episode is Lethe. Last time I called it Lethe. I swear that there's something in Star Trek Discovery called Lethe, but maybe
we'll find out.
Well, yeah, I swear it's a planet in season 2, I want to say, but maybe I'm wrong. So the plot of this Lethe, as we found out, is the USS Discovery crew is intrigued by new addition, Lieutenant Ash Tyler. Sarek seeks Burnham's help rekindling memories from her past. Admiral Cornwell questions Lorca's tactics. So we get three interesting sentences that are fairly accurate. I think the first one is the, well, if I'm honest, the first two are the least accurate. The last one's very accurate. Like, the first one implies that everyone in the crew is interested in Lieutenant Ash Tyler, but
just Tilly.
It's just Tilly.
We just see Tilly.
And Michael. Because
She's only interested because Tilly has dragged her to a conversation
with Ash. She's interested when she hears that he fought 6 Klingons by himself, and then she's like, that's impossible.
Yeah.
So that's not inaccurate, but it's like, you know,
misleading a little.
Two crew members are interested. Saru could give less of a shit, as could
No fucks given.
As could Hugh and Paul, literally any other character.
I guess
Lorca's
it.
Interested in him. Yeah. He's asking him all these questions. So I guess three counts. Okay, three counts. But then the second one.
That isn't the major part of the episode, even though it's the first sentence.
It's a part of the episode, but then the second sentence is where I get a little bit like, okay, so Sarek's in help, he's rekindled memories for her. That is true. That is a true statement. But also it's more he's rekindled memories for himself. It's about him.
Yeah, it's about him.
But it's
almost
all
dying.
About Michael. And then of course Lorca's tactics being questioned is in this episode. So,
and that I would say is the probably the most significant plot that continues, like the one with where they take Sarek and Michael's relationship does stem a lot from this episode.
True.
So it does matter more than the plots of the previous ones, I think.
Yes. So I remember when this episode first aired and I found it boring and bad. I would give it a yum if this was my first watching of it. I found it dull, and I found it aggravating in how silly it was in terms of characterization of Sarek and fight scenes being used, and it reinforcing my disdain for the idea of how important Michael Burnham, this new character, is to the legacy of Star Trek, which is her relationship via Spock. Yeah. This episode is enforcing that even more heavily because Sarek's memories and all of that. And I remember when I first watched it, I found it boring and I hated it. Not hated, didn't like it. And I remember, you know, when we were first watching this show, you have to get acclimatized to it. And I was getting really aggravated by little things that really don't matter, but it kind of does matter if you care about Star Trek universe, which is very, very upfront. I remember when I first watched this, I was so angry that they had holodeck because, look, I was born after Next Gen had already started and whatnot, but I remember how groundbreaking it was that Star Trek Next Generation offered the holodeck as an idea and as a permanent fixture to that show. And this show is taking it away from that. Like, I know it isn't because Next Gen came out first, but in the timeline, it's like, oh, they already had holodecks. I guess all the big hoopla and the big wowza of it being a holodeck is kind of neutered in a way. And I remember that really bugging me the first time. And I gotta be honest, it still bugs me now, but not as much as other continuity things like we've talked about, like robot crew members and so on.
Yeah, it's more briefly included than a lot of the other continuity things. I think I also had an issue with that scene because it feels like they're just playing laser tag with the Klingons.
Which is what they are doing.
Yeah, they are just playing laser tag, which is like...
Is Lorca a pussy and he keeps the safety on?
It's
fuck off. As if Lorca would keep the safety on, he would have it off and he would get injured like a motherfucker. Yeah. If B'Elanna Torres, who is not as much of a badass, mean motherfucker as Lorca is, she turns the safety off on her holodeck stuff, and Worf does, and fucking Reg Barkley does at times too, then no way is Lorca going to be like, you know what we do? We trade with the safety on, as if, motherfucker.
Yeah, they don't even introduce that as an idea.
Oh, they don't know it's an idea.
They don't. Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. But, you know, them having a counter for how many Klingons they killed on their guns once they leave, like you do when you play laser tag.
Well, they're laser tag phases.
Captain, out of respect,
don't apologize for excellence. I want my chief of security to shoot better than I do.
On this watching of the episode, though, Rachel, I found it not as infuriating, but still boring. But I will say this episode felt a lot more focused, and I felt like this was on paper, structurally, and in script writing terms, a lot stronger at exploring character and theme with just loose framework of sci-fi plottingness. You know, it's a rescue mission, but really our rescue mission's really about the rescue mission. It's about the character journey along the way to a rescue mission. And I felt the script of this was a lot tighter than the actual execution of this episode itself, because at the end of the day, the biggest crime to me was lots of interesting ideas that are there. They are physically there. I can point to them and say, there's interesting ideas being explored. And if someone said, I like this episode, I wouldn't argue with them fully. But to me, it was still boring. I found this episode just boring. What about you? How did you feel?
I wasn't as bored as I think you were. But I think I watched it in a sort of like disassociative way, where
as engaged people often do.
Yeah.
Not bored people.
No, definitely not that. But it was like, I didn't really care, but I was entertained when it was really bad.
What I'm getting is you
still
didn't
liked it though.
No, you said it's a bad episode and you enjoyed how bad it was. Well, I'm actually on a different end. I found it boring and I was intrigued when it was good. And the bad stuff was every so often and it was just kind of generically bad to me. Which I mean by that is I never in my lifetime have wanted to see Spock's father, the great diplomat, in a kung fu action fight sequence. Not even just once, but we get it like 14 times in this one episode.
Yeah, and there's a lot.
And that's
there's
something, and that's bad. That's bad. And I didn't find that interesting or funny bad. I just found it awkward and embarrassingly
just
bad.
How emotional Sarek is in every single scene.
No, that's different, you see, because they don't, they have a reason for that. But there's many other ideas that they could have fleshed out as a whole episode. The whole father-daughter conflict thing that they got going on that is at the center of this episode could have been a bigger thrust of the episode, but it takes so long to get there because they have to go find him, they have to go make this piece of tech, and then he rejects her from being in his mind, and then they have a conversation, and it feels like that in itself could have been a big character episode. I think of the episode where Riker's dad comes on board the ship and Riker refuses to interact with him and talk with him, and that's a father-son episode, and that could have been this, and it doesn't want to do that as fully either, but
no, nothing I wouldn't is say given it was the room
but
to
I wouldn't
breathe.
Say it was as unfocused as some previous episodes we've discussed on this this I feel like script wise I think they did a decent enough job, but they did rush through these things. If we're going to talk about the synthetic mind meld, they literally have a line of dialogue from Lorca, I do believe, in which he basically says, yeah, there's no time to have a theological chat about this, or whatever it is. And he basically...
Metaphysical
chat about this, which is, cough, cough. To me, it just screams, hello, Star Trek fans. We don't have the time to do what Star Trek does, which is have debates and philosophical and metaphysical. That's what Star Trek is. When you go watch Next Gen, when you go watch TOS, Deep Space Nine, Enterprise, a lot of these, half the episodes are them having that discussion. But in this,
but you know,
they just have to hand wave and go, we don't have time to do that thing that Star Trek would do. We have to rush to the kung fu action.
Yeah.
Not once, not twice, but thrice.
What are you doing here? This is my mind.
You brought me here.
Leave now!
Did we need all the kung fu action instead of actual, not just scientific conversations, but conversations? Because this episode had conversations that I found genuinely interesting, even despite my own personal bias and reservations. The Michael Sarek stuff, if I remove from my brain, that's supposed to be Sarek.
Yeah, I had to do
there's
that
an
too.
There's an interesting conversation and stuff there, even though some of the exposition is a little too heavy. But with Lorca and his whole storyline, I thought that was really well done. The conversations there and the acting there and the bouncing off each other with the characters he had to interact with Ash Tyler and with the Admiral, that stuff was great, but no, we have to have kung fu action. We don't have enough time for them to have a scientific chat or to further explore and deepen the real conversations we're already having. We have to have kung fu action. We have to have a guy explode. We have to have Paul say gravy. And it just makes me go...
Yeah, that's a whole thing to get to.
What?
Okay, so an issue that I was having with this episode as it was playing out was the fact that I still have an issue with the fact that they don't let anything breathe. They rush through everything. But I was really noticing in this episode, and I guess it's just a direction thing.
The filters?
No.
Far out, they went crazy with the filters this episode.
Yeah. No, the scenes where we actually got two characters talking to each other, they're talking so much faster.
Oh, yeah. They have to talk like that because if you have it like old Star Trek in which...
And the music in the background is... they're getting breakfast. They're getting breakfast. That is it. That it doesn't require... Like, it feels like they've put the stuff on, like, just times, like, 0.25 speed. Because it doesn't feel natural. Like, I love a fast-talking show.
We do. We do enjoy that.
And I love fast-talking characters. Like...
Yeah. But not every character, even in fast-talking shows, should be fast-talking all the time. It makes it exhausting, and it kind of feels like they don't care about the writing because you got to rush through
it.
Got to rush through everything.
Feels really odd as well, because they talk slower and calmer when they're in a crisis.
Well, we're pointing to an issue that we know we will have with the show late down the road. So we're already pinpointing. Let's say episode 6 is where this issue starts, which is... One of the main issues that we have with Star Trek Discovery, and it amplifies in season 2, but now we're noticing it in episode 6 of season 1, is it feels as if the show, via direction and later writing, and even in this episode writing with that line from Lorca that's basically saying, we don't have time to do the Star Trek thing and talk.
Yeah.
It feels as if the show is embarrassed and annoyed and doesn't feel confident in doing Star Trek stuff, which is having two people in a room talking. Instead, it has to be we spin the camera around, quick cuts, energetic music, fast dialogue. Instead of just, it's a simple scene in which two people debate or three people, or just people have a conference and there's no like... stress-inducing editing or seizure-inducing lens flares and all this stuff. We're noticing here in episode 6 of season 1 that they're already beginning that lurching approach of we have to quicken everything up so that the audience stays engaged, which is a disappointing fact because it's saying subtly, it's saying subconsciously that the show does not believe in the audience's attention span, thus their intelligence as well. And that's a disappointment because we talked about with the first episode and others in this season thus far that they are doing the Star Trek thing. They are having conversations. They are having slow down moments. They are doing these things. They have the fast moments too, but it felt more natural. But in this episode, we're noticing, you especially, are noticing that they're putting their foot on the pedal a bit more towards what we will eventually grow to hate about this show.
Hey, why not? Now, we boost your neural impulses to reconnect with his Katra, then pump those same signals into your noggin, and voila, Seraph vision. I gotta say, this Katra stuff is way cool. An uncharted superhighway connecting all of consciousness and life?
We have exactly no time to discuss the metaphysical implications.
One of the things I really want to talk about, Rachel, is Sarek.
We recently
just rewatched the Next Gen episode called Sarek, in which we had Mark Leonard performing Sarek.
Yeah, that's part of what makes watching this worse. Is
watching Star Trek. Star Trek.
But especially when we get an episode where it is like a direct comparison.
And companion. Because this is a Sarek-centered episode.
Yeah.
Sarek's not a main character in Star Trek. Yeah. He is a minor character. He does not get into the double digits of amount of appearances in Star Trek's films and movies and episodes. So when you have these episodes where it's centered on this character, they're companions to one another because they are feeding off one another. The first Sarek episode in TOS and then Sarek in TNG in his first episode, you link those two together because it's featuring the same character via the same actor as well. So you companion them together, you compare them to one another, you draw these comparisons. So it's not unfair to do the same in this episode, in which this episode is about the character of Sarek, who, as we've said, Rachel, if people who have not watched Star Trek or heard of Star Trek before watching this show, Sarek to them is a new character. But this show is framing it in a way in which it's for the people who know who Sarek is primarily. This is for people who know who Sarek is. We all know Sarek, the legendary diplomat and the father of Spock. So it's not unfair to draw comparisons to characterization via the writing and the performance. What do you think about the characterization of Sarek in this series and in this episode?
It's trash.
Trash.
Trash. Dance.
Why? Because I just want to say, I personally don't think the act is bad.
No.
But he's not Sarek. No. He could be any other Vulcan, but I do not buy this guy as Sarek. And I know it's not just because he, the guy doesn't necessarily look like the original guy. That doesn't matter.
No.
It's about the attitude.
Yeah.
And, you know, go on.
So for me, like I was mentioning, at this stage, I'm really starting to have to divorce this from the rest.
Mm.
It's Discovery on it and Picard on its own.
Yes.
And then there's better stuff.
But as I just said, you can't do that, Rachel, because these shows...
I can't.
Are linked to those. They embrace those things. You can't do what you're like. I'm saying you can.
Okay.
I mean,
yeah.
I'm not the police. I'm not going to arrest you and say you're under arrest for not divorcing yourself from previous Star Trek canon. But the show itself doesn't want you. It doesn't want you to do that.
Yeah.
And for that, I have so much
shame.
Yes.
Sarek is cold.
Mm-hmm.
Logical, calculating. He's very dignified, very regal, very very about the logic and about above board and about the books. But the thing about Sarek as a person,
mm-hmm.
as a character, is he's a bad father.
Yeah,
that's the primary thing I think about. Is mm-hmm. his constant conflict of interest for the audience is he is a bad father. And eventually, even he admits that he was also a bad husband.
Yeah.
And that is the thing about Sarek that is so fascinating. And because of his cold Vulcan logic, he is a bad father. And because he has a child and he has a wife who aren't full Vulcans, and he cannot adapt as fully as you would like, as one would like him to accommodate those things. And then you've got Cybok, that's a whole other issue, and Star Trek Discovery doesn't want to deal with that issue either.
No, they
but
don't acknowledge
Sarek
that.
Is a good man, but
yes.
a bad father.
Mm-hmm.
But this show thinks that Sarek is a good man, and he's not the greatest father, but in the end, he tries, and that makes him good. The thing about Sarek is... He was just a bad father, and that was it. Like, I don't look at him, I go, that guy's a bad dad. In this show, I don't. I go, oh, well, he fucked up, but you know what? He's all right now.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to work out. In the original show, I didn't get that vibe. I didn't think it was going to work out with Sarek. I thought it was too late. Like, I always felt like, it's a bummer. Like, even in Star Trek 3, where he's the most emotional, and he wants Spock's Katra. And he's the most, like, most tender there about Spock. I don't know. It just, he's a bad father. In this show, the characterization is off because he's not as cold.
No.
He's more emotional. In this episode, it's justified because he's in his dream state and he's delusional.
Yeah.
Even though I would make an argument that it would be far more interesting narratively if him and Michael worked together to figure out how to escape his mind logically. That would have been a far more interesting story to me if if she entered and he found her and it started to unravel that he was in a dream and they needed to get out, like an Alice in Wonderland type story, wink wink. That would have been far more interesting than he yeets her into space. That would have been far more interesting if they coldly deduction figured out how to get out of his mind.
Yeah.
That would have been far more interesting than, Michael, I hate you. Yeet.
Yep. Again, another idea that could have been a whole...
episode.
Yeah. If I can kind of boil down what I think you said, which is that... Yes, he's a bad father, and one of, like, the foundation for why he is a bad father is his reliance on Vulcan fundamental ideas that do not allow, he doesn't overcome in order to be able to connect to those that he cares for.
That's it. And that's what was always fascinating about Sarek. When we watched that TNG episode and he's suffering from that, you know, that Alzheimer's type disease where he's getting emotions and whatnot, and him emotionally breaking down through the mind meld with Picard, and we're getting an insight into his mind that Sarek is very much aware that he's a bad partner and a bad father, and that he's chosen logic over emotion when he probably shouldn't have, but that's just the way that he is. And that is far more interesting.
A fault of his that he recognizes, there is a level of regret to that he has, but he isn't willing or doesn't think that going back and changing those things would make things better necessarily.
But here's the thing that what makes that Sarek interesting, because in this episode he goes through the same process of regret and whatever. What makes it more interesting in Next Gen and what makes the characterization in this show less true is
we are just told
Sarek. No, yes, but Sarek in this show openly admits to failure,
yes,
time and time and time and time again. Think of that episode of Cold Sarek in which he is emotionally distraught and he spends 90% of the episode railroading Picard to let him do the thing, because logic can lead one astray.
Yeah.
This series, he is far too emotional in the performance and in the writing, and he's open about his failures as a parental unit and as a husband and partner and all this, and I just don't buy that. Sarek's the type of guy where introspectively he's aware of that, but I don't see him just sitting down and being like, you know, I fucked up as a dad.
And you, Sarek, would you also say thank you to your son?
I don't understand.
For saving your life.
Spock acted in the only logical manner open to him. One does not thank logic, Amanda.
So then we get to the point where, in this version, Sarek is having those... It's a weird kind of halfway point. Because if they acknowledge that these emotions are so volatile that he is having trouble experiencing them and acknowledging them, that would be one thing.
Mm.
That would be the logical progression of, like, he is in the process of dying, his brain isn't functioning properly, thus his emotions have gone to their full potential.
And that's, I think, what they're trying to say.
But it isn't, because he is still there. When Burnham isn't there, he is just playing through this memory.
That is true.
That is the impression that we get.
Because that's what he's fixated on. It's his biggest mistake.
He is just looping in that memory, reenacting it as it was. He isn't playing it out like he wishes what he could have done, or like imagining what could have gone different. Mm. Like, what if he played into those emotions in that moment? It's just like, no, he's just a little upset, and he only really, like, he gets more upset when Burnham's there. Because it's an invasion of his mind.
But it's her memory too. That's the thing that makes it annoying, because I was going to make a joke, but I know it's a my mind for your mind type thing, where it's like, how come he has a memory of her getting that Alice in Wonderland book when he's over there chatting? Because it's her memory too.
Yeah.
I think just to kind of wrap up this whole Sarek issue is, this story could work.
Yeah.
The way it's done, even with us complaining, I think this story could have worked if instead of him having blocked her out with extreme emotion and wanting to do kung fu fights, which is not Sarek at all. I'm sorry, but I do not give a shit if Star Trek Discovery fans come over and be like, oh, but it was cool, or this version of Sarek isn't like your granddad, Sarek.
He's an ambassador. But that is what he is.
If he had denied her and blocked her out and treated her coldly with his harsh, cold Vulcan exterior, and through the journey of her in his mind, breaking down those barriers to find out the emotional truth of why he's living this memory over and over again, this story would resonate far better, and it would feel more like Sarek, because in other Sarek stories, that's the kind of thing we see, is it's them breaking down that cold, harsh Vulcan exterior to find out the emotional truth at the core of Sarek's issue with whatever the story is. And in this, instead, he's overly emotional from the get-go. He yeets her into space. They do kung fu action. And then they have a logical conversation. I think this episode would have worked better if it was along that line. Whether it would be the story that I suggested, where they have to figure out logically how to get out of his brain. And then maybe the logic to get out of his brain isn't logic, but emotion. That would have been a neat little twist. Yeah. But no, instead, kung fu action. You know, Sarek, that good old kung fu master. I mean, he did say she got her martial arts training, her karate training, her Vulcan karate.
I remember studying his career in school. The Treaty of Alpha Cygnus IX, the Corridon admission to the Federation, Klingon Alliance.
I met him once. Many years ago, very briefly, at his son's wedding. I can tell you that was quite a moment for a young lieutenant, standing in the presence of such history. I remember he spoke to me, and I just stood there, grinning like an idiot.
Captain, you? Tongue-tied.
Indeed. How do you make small talk with someone who shaped the Federation?
You'll fail.
All of this, I sound more frustrated about it than I am with it, because this was how I felt the first time, this frustration that is in my voice. This time round, I was just bored. My eyes were tired because they used this stupid orange filter to represent that it's the past or whatever, or it's a memory. And I found it very obnoxious, and it made me my eyes sleepy. You know how some Marvel movies have that kind of washed out filter on Earth because it wants to make you go to sleep? That's how this felt. It just felt like... Okay, so like... characterization of Sarek's weird and wrong, and it doesn't feel right. But hey, for people who haven't seen Star Trek before, they're like, oh, that guy's just a, you know, he's a fuck-up dad, but at the end of the day, he's a good guy.
Fine. He wants to be a better dad.
Fine. That's fine for people who are new to Star Trek. But at the same time, this episode is so reliant on the fact that it's related to previous Star Trek canon. My main issue with this Sarek story still, and it will be amplified in season 2, is they're undercutting Michael by making it that Michael is the reason for everything that happened to Spock. In this episode, it's Michael got accepted, but oh, they could only accept one of his two not Vulcan children. And of course, he wants to choose Spock.
You're almost Vulcan.
Almost Vulcans.
That's what he says. One of your almost Vulcans. And it's like, that was catty, and it didn't sound right coming out of a Vulcan's mouth.
No, it does. It didn't sound right coming out of that guy's mouth, that specific actor's mouth. He didn't seem like the kind of guy who would say that. If it was a younger Vulcan guy, or someone Sarek's age, I reckon that could come out. But that guy, he didn't seem right with the inflection he delivered it. Maybe if he delivered it, it sounded like I'm delivering a sassy line.
Yeah, he's the head of the Vulcan...
Well, Vulcans are dicks. Let's not forget that.
Oh, yeah. But, like, he's the head of the prestigious scientific
academy
sector.
Thing,
And he was just like, you gotta pick one of your kids, bitch.
Which is annoying because it's just stating that Michael's so important to the legacy of Star Trek because he chose Spock and then Spock didn't do it. So that amplifies the hatred that he has for Spock in the original series.
Yeah.
It is basically stating that Michael is at the center and is one of the central reasons for why Spock and his own father, Sarek, have a strained relationship. And that in itself is robbing the agency of Michael as a character who stands on her own merits. Instead, it's building that her merits are the fact that she adds merits to characters that aren't in this show, that exist in a previous show. I know Spock will rock up in season 2, but Spock's not a main character in season 2 either. He comes in halfway through and he's a supporting character. It is a bothersome thing to me that they've done this to this character, because I don't like Michael as a character that much overall, like by season 2, but I've been enjoying her enough on this rewatch, and it's shit like this that just ruins it, because they want to feed into fan service, yet they know, the writers know, that this is going to piss off fans, but it's going to excite people who are somewhat familiar with Star Trek. And it's going to be completely abstract to people who have no familiarity with Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And it just is annoying, because all it is doing is just making Michael less of her own character and instead a character that imports legacy onto characters that aren't in this show.
What we always lean on is the fact that we're 10 years before the very beginning of this franchise. And so there is time to explore things. There's time to see. So maybe these things happened, which maybe led to this. Maybe these things happened that seem crazy, but they ultimately led to what we pick up with in 1966, right? And so Spock is one of them.
The thing that bothers me about the logic extremists, other than it feels very silly and it's something that they really don't ever explore again.
No.
One of the things that bothers me is it's already an explored theme with the Klingons and other villain characters we've already seen before. It just kind of feels like a rinse repeat. But what bothers me about it in this particular episode is it doesn't matter. You could say it matters because in the flashback, due to the same logic extremist racism and bias that the Vulcan counselor guy has, that's why Sarek had to make this choice or whatever.
Yeah.
But we
can't just open the gates to everybody.
But I think
there can only be one.
But I think if you're going to do that, one, just make that guy, for some reason, it just feels flat to me. I think it's just there, the Vulcan extremists, so that we could have a big boom boom and Sarek is in trouble and we have to connect it through to
it.
His memory of a time he had to experience racism. Mm, and
I suppose so.
The guy in the dream, in the memory of racism, isn't a logic extremist.
No.
He's just a regular Vulcan guy. So what are they saying? There's no difference between the logic extremists and the Vulcan guy and regular Vulcans? Does that mean it's just stating that all Vulcans except for our holy boy Sarek are evil racists? Because I know Vulcans are very weird in Star Trek because they are inconsistent to me. That each series has its, and each episode has its own different takes and its own different versions of how much of a stickler for culture and spirituality and logic they are. And that's Star Trek in a nutshell. There's a lot of inconsistencies, and that's why some people might get annoyed by the fact that we complain about inconsistencies in Star Trek Discovery, because there's inconsistencies in all Star Trek, and that is
and there's any,
true.
There's large inconsistencies within any
large running franchise.
Yeah. Any existing IP, there's always going to be something.
And and don't forget, people, that's not assuming, and that's the assumption that those big inconsistencies don't bother me in other Star Treks. They do, sometimes, they really do. And if it's hinging on the story, then that it will bother me very much. The logic extremist just feels thrown in there as just a stupid boom boom thing, and it doesn't really feel like a fleshed out idea, and it doesn't feel like, and I don't remember it ever really being an issue that we will ever explore again, and it just feels like it could have been a whole episode. Can we talk about Stamets? He's in one scene, but boy, is it memorable.
Yeah, it's a something.
You got his quotes.
Yeah, I do have a few. Okay. So
groovy.
Yeah. way cool.
Way cool. Yeah. So what did you think about the Stamets stuff? Because we know where why it is and where it goes.
I don't know. I
psychic head of speed. That was a lot.
I was going to say adrenaline shot, but okay. I don't know. I didn't mind it that much.
I just found it really embarrassing.
I found it a pathetic attempt.
At comedy?
At comedy.
All I could say, and I'll talk about it in our Hudar section, was how has this man been medically approved to serve in his position?
Yeah.
That's all I stated in my brain when that scene happened, because we need the season plot to develop answer.
Things need to happen.
Because even Lorca seemed concerned. And Lorca didn't like Stamets enough to want to be concerned, but even he seemed concerned about Paul's behavior. But I guess, you know, I'll leave it for the Huda.
Yeah, because Lorca's just like,
sucks
as
a partner
and
a doctor, by the way.
I guess you really have changed since you...
But he had concern on his face throughout the whole conversation, Lorca. He was looking at him and he was judging. Like he was examining him, being like, I'm not comfortable with this.
So I do want to take a moment to go through just a moment from that scene with Stamets and Michael.
Mm.
Which he goes, are you really that crazy? She responds, by raising both of her eyebrows and just looking at him.
Well, that's what we call visual storytelling.
And then he just says, good to know.
Yeah, visual storytelling.
But he sounds really excited.
Well, he is. He's high.
He's a very happy camper.
Well, we know it's because he's eugenics boy.
Yeah.
Okay, Paul is there and they're setting up that storyline. And the thing... We'll talk about the poll stuff more next episode because they delve more into that. Mm-hmm. But all I will say is
we discussed a it's lot a about way
it's lost. It's a loose thread in the season, really, that whole thing. But we'll discuss it next episode.
Maybe it's not as much of a loose thread as we remember.
I want to talk about another loose thread in this episode, Lieutenant Ash Tyler, who is a character that's in the show, and I feel very weird about it.
I have a question.
Yes.
Okay. So he's Lieutenant Ash Tyler.
Correct.
Okay. So he's reasonably well-ranked, right?
Yes.
So how much of a promotion is it for him to get a bridge position? Because he doesn't seem concerned at all, but they haven't mentioned that he was a bridge officer.
I don't think he's been a bridge officer, but he is a soul. No, he does have some concern. He's like, really? You're really considering me for the position kind of thing?
But that's just because he's so new to the ship.
I think that's the case. I think he's in that phase because he's a military man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we know technically he's actually secretly a Klingon and he's secretly excited to get more power, even though he secretly doesn't know that he's a secret Klingon.
Yeah, that's why it's a weird kind of foreshadowing.
Oh, he fights like a Klingon?
Yeah, that Lorca says.
You get it, boys and girls? He's a Klingon.
Well, I figure I've seen you fly, shoot, fight like a Klingon.
The Klingon guard is beating on me for 7 months. I was bound to pick something up.
Now, most people would have given up. You learn.
Ash Tyler I feel very weird about because we know that he's secretly a Klingon. This episode did lots of haha, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, he's secretly a Klingon. And like when he hears her name's Michael, he instantly is like his programming has turned on and he's like, Michael Burnham? Like he knows who she is already, even though he shouldn't know who she is by the logic of his alias, of the fact that he's been in prison this whole time. And this is him just being
on
the ship
for a little while. And
but not long enough.
Enough to know or to hear something.
Perhaps, but we know the secret logic that it's because he spent all that time on the Shinjo looking at her bio stuff and being like, I'm going to get her. And he knows that she was the one that fucked up his leader.
Yeah.
But when it comes to Lieutenant Ash Tyler, he was in the episode.
Yeah.
He served a purpose.
He did.
He gave our hero words of wisdom that she took on board. And it was nice that Michael didn't solve the problem on her own and somebody else did. But the issue is this is his introduction episode. I know last week was his introduction episode, but this is his introduction to other characters and for us to see him operate as a regular officer. And he is there. He's there. He's a guy. He will serve a purpose and he's there. No real issues with his acting. The guy does a decent enough job. Maybe he needs a bit of a haircut, but other than that, because I found it very distracting that his hair was flopping in front of his eyes while doing the holodeck shooting, I thought, I don't know about that. But
do you remember?
He was there.
Do you remember some of his lines?
No, because he was just there, you know? He was there. He served a purpose. It's like how Harry Kim's there in Voyager. Harry Kim was there. He, you know, Harry Kim had stories, but all you would say is, yeah, but he was there.
I mean, that's a joke. That's the biggest question. Everyone always asks, why weren't you promoted? You know, why weren't you promoted? Well, I called the writers up. I'm like, hey, season 5, Ensign Kim is still Ensign Kim. Any idea on when the promotion's going to happen? And the head writer was like, well, somebody's got to be the ensign.
And I also just want to bring up how awkward and dumb it is that he's flirting with Michael at the end of the episode.
Well, I'm going to actually disagree with you on that because
I think it's the wrong moment.
I thought it was perfectly adequate because we know what his motives are in realism. We know that he's a secret Klingon spy. It was fine.
Yeah.
My issue with that, Rachel, is that's not the end of the episode.
No.
That was a perfect end of episode where they shake hands and it's a revisit to the earlier scene. I was like, okay, and credit.
More.
And then there's a tacked on, further series plot stuff.
Yeah, we get the bit
Admiral being captured and then Lorca being like, I'm not going to do what I usually do because that would benefit me. And then
that wouldn't benefit him.
No. If I did what I usually did, that wouldn't benefit me in this mode, but if I don't do it, it benefits me this time. That's the kind of thing.
I'm going to follow the rules now that it's convenient.
Although I did find the final shot of the episode very compelling. Talk about Lorca's stuff.
Like the idea
he was compelling this episode.
That he was fairly sure that he was sending her to her death, or that at least something would go wrong. Like, he knew that because he knows the Klingons. He knows better. But that he wasn't cocky enough to think that it would go off without a hitch. Like, that's him being prepared.
So, let's talk about Lorca's stuff. I found it great.
Yeah.
I found it compelling. I found that they did a good mixture of exposition dumping, natural conversations, natural chemistry, and foreshadowing, and most importantly, something that I condemn Star Trek Discovery for not doing after this, visual storytelling.
What's that?
They told us a story visually and it pays off later. Him with the scars on his back and the phaser underneath his bed tells you it all with the visuals there. And then later when we find out the reasonings of that and they don't make a big hoopla about it,
it's great.
It's compelling. And even the final shot, it's a bit on the nose, but him looking in the mirror and it's like, ha ha, he's a mirror version guy, ha ha, and he's got the phaser in his back of his pants. I was compelled from the visual storytelling going on there, and I wish that that was something more prevalent in this show. It felt like the show wasn't speaking down to me or rushing through it. It was trusting me to pick up on those things and make my own conclusions and to draw my own stuff. It felt like I was actually watching something that cared about my, not just entertainment, but my intellectual stimulation. It felt genuine. And the conversations that they had and the stuff that he didn't know and had to play off.
Yeah, that was great.
Really great stuff. And I thoroughly enjoyed it because there is the real complex situation of she's his friend, the original guy's friend, and she wants to just connect with him on a personal level, but she's also his superior officer. So there's a concern there from a leadership position and a personal mm-hmm. position, and they have to tightrope walk that, and he manipulates that
Ooh, yeah.
to his benefit until
and
it's too late.
She figures that out.
Yes,
and
because he fucks up.
Yeah, because he goes he too
has,
far.
He has he's, trust issues because he's from a mirror universe where people will assassinate you in your sleep.
His instincts he can't
in.
Overcome.
And that was great.
Yeah, I do...
felt like I was watching a show.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like I was watching a good show.
A nice, cute moment when he's just like, well, if you're not here as a Starfleet officer, let's use the language.
Let's chat as friends or
let's
whatever.
Let's chat as friends.
And he grabs out
the
alcohol.
Bottle of whiskey. And I was just like, okay, so the language of friendship is whiskey. Good to know.
And then we know that, you know, we already know this, but they've fucked before. And then they fuck in this episode for sure. And I found it compelling that there were Star Trek things there. There was conversations about the fact that he got tortured last week and he's already back in the commander's chair. And is that good or bad? And the conversations about being on the front line of war compared to being an admiral in the back seat in the office back home. That stuff was compelling to me. I found that genuinely intriguing, stimulating, and I loved it. I thought that should have been the whole episode, and I wasn't upset that that wasn't the full focus of the episode like I was last episode about Saru being in charge. I wasn't upset about that. I thought they did a good balancing act, but, you know, I still would like more because it was the best thing about the episode. I have no complaints with how that story went. I've usually had a caveat to each story in the episodes, but this one, it was good, and the acting was great. His accent this episode was a little flaky in points. He really had a different kind of tone going on with his voice, and I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just those were the best takes, but his accent wasn't at the best take, but the acting was, and that's good enough for me. That's good.
I also really like how they're kind of they're showing us through Lorca's actions the way that he's kind of collecting people as assets.
He's getting his crew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's trying to get who's familiar with him to him.
He's manipulating them.
Yeah, like by saying to Ash, like, if you don't come back with her, don't come back at all, referring to Michael.
Yeah, because he loves her.
Yeah.
Because he's in love with the other version of her who's
and
dead.
Yeah, he's determined. He's determined to protect her, but also protecting himself. And then that way of, like, showing how much he cares for her through those actions, because he hasn't really shown that much up until that point in that kind of way where it's very definitive. It's not she's just as important as everybody else. It's like, no, she is the important thing.
That's right. And that really rings true on this rewatch, because the first time watching it, you don't understand fully as to why he's doing these things, because it's a mystery box thing.
It feels more unnatural than the first one, because it's like,
why did he do this?
Why her? Why is this so important?
I really was, and I even forgot with this episode, I wrote down in my notes and then I had to scratch it out, which was, why did he accept to help Sarek in this? What does that benefit, if in anything, doesn't that lessen his benefit to what he needs to do? He needs the war to continue so that he can keep using the spore drive so then he can go back home.
Yeah.
But if he saves Sarek and lets their peace talks continue, then that tactic, that benefit is maybe greatly reduced because there could be peace.
Yeah.
But, like you said, he knows the Klingons.
Mm-hmm.
He knows that they're not actually going to do that, which is a weird thing that's actually true. Like but then at the end, he does it specifically because it will benefit his relationship with Michael, because she's skeptical of him, but this pushes her to be for him. At the beginning, she does it. She's even speaking smack about Lorca and being like, he's a, you know, like, that's not how Captain Lorca is. He doesn't just adopt people. He doesn't care for people. And then by the end, she's very proud to be working alongside and for a captain like him. It's great manipulation. And like you said, he takes risks. He gambles these things. Because in this episode, it's not stated very clearly if he knew that the Klingons, like, there was no guarantee that the Klingons would capture her. There was no guarantee knew.
I think he was hoping that she would just be killed.
We knew that he was hoping that, but he didn't have a
guarantee. He was hoping for it to go wrong in
We, the audience in this episode, don't know for a fact that he has known for a fact that that wouldn't go off without a hitch. Like,
that it was always going to be a trap.
Yeah, we don't know that in this particular episode. It was a gamble on his part, but it worked. And I do think it's a little bit like, maybe we'll see, but it's a little bit like a writer's trick of they need it to work.
Yeah, they do.
Because if she just went back home, he would lose his position, and then how are they going to write themselves out of that corner?
Yeah.
But other than that, I think my prevailing thing is with this episode, just to go into kind of my wrapping up thoughts on how I feel about this episode, I feel meh about it. That Lorca stuff was interesting, but the rest of the episode felt muddled. It felt boring. Characterization didn't feel right. Characters were there, but they didn't really feel like they added anything to the plot. There's a whole thing about Tilly learning to be her own woman and captain and whatever, and at the end she's like, oh, I already figured it out. I don't know what that's all about. Like, I don't know how she went on that arc in this episode, but
she's like, I have.
I have. I don't know when she went on that arc. I don't know when she went on that arc.
Tilly's gone from,
I'm not sure,
I need a mentor, this is my mentor, to I don't need a mentor in three scenes.
Yeah, I don't know how she came to that. I know how Michael came to that, but I don't know how she came to that in this episode.
Yeah, it's weird.
But overall, I found this episode still boring. I think that I will remember it fondly for the Lorca stuff, because I still remember that Lorca stuff from the first time watching it, but that isn't in the episode as much as the other stuff. This episode is there.
I don't want to ruin your career, but when I return, we'll talk about how you stepped down. And after you get some help, maybe we'll get you back in that chair.
I'm just going to go through some of my nitpicks. I didn't like how they were running. It felt very actors having to keep us up a certain pace for the cameras. They had this really bouncy run.
Take it after take.
Bouncy run. Did you notice how they were? And I go, oh, they're on a spaceship with different gravity. But No, that didn't. That doesn't seem to be affecting the guys in the holodeck simulation, did it?
The recap in the middle of the episode.
What the fuck was that? Like, we go from one thing, fade, cut to black for ad break, and then it's like a recap. It was so abrasive. And then you popped up, and it was like, whoa, 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 whoa. I felt tonal whiplash. I was I was like, what the fuck?
She's so weak that she's raspy when she wakes up, too, and it's just so lazy.
Michael, when she wakes up, let me just go through mine. I already mentioned the floppy hair that is in his eyes. Fight Like a Klingon was a little too on the nose for a foreshadowing thing in retrospect. Oh, this is one that I've, a current one. It's a nitpick for sure. And I understand why. But I miss having the real computer's voice. And the reason that we don't is because, you know, she died. And that's upsetting. But there is a thing where there's a comfort there. That we
familiarity.
The familiarity. It's a nitpick complaint for sure. But when the computer speaks in this one, just because of my own bias, my brain just gets taken out of the reality of it and go, that's not the computer. That's some actress. So my brain, and that's not this show's fault. I understand why it's like that. I 100% do. That is just on me. That's why it's in a nitpick.
So I got annoyed that the food replicator, it praises you on your choices. And it lists the benefits of food that you have eaten. It's just like, here's your delicious breakfast burrito. Good job on picking this thing. It's good at this. And it's like, list the benefits of green tea. And I'm like, why?
It's weird to me.
How annoying would that be?
Yeah.
Every time you ordered a green tea, then it's just like, good on you. This is full of antioxidants.
Oh, grey hot. It's weird to me that it feels like to me Tilly's characterization's a little inconsistent at late, where she's so socially awkward she can barely get out a sentence, but in this episode she's really socially confident enough to openly flirt with a guy, which I don't think that's unrealistic. I just think in terms of how broadly they've been playing up her social awkwardness, it kind of felt out of nowhere that she's now like this cocky, I want to flirt with this guy, and she's very open about what she wants. And
I am just going to sit down and talk to you.
It was a little bit like, oh, okay. Okay, this one was really weird. We got told that Michael had literally died in an explosion, but thanks to this Cutra exchange, the Cutra has healing powers, and it served as a soul graft. And that was one of those lines that they said it so quickly and so abrasively, like you forget that that was a thing that was said. And I just had to pull that up because I'm sure that the Cutra thing, like I said, is the thing that Star Trek 3 pulled out of its ass. I'm sure that this is true, or like there's people who know Vulcan stuff who could say otherwise or whatever. But it's just one of those big lore break, like one of those big lore universe things that they just so quickly rush through because they don't want you to think about the fact that she's been resurrected from the dead and she had a soul graft.
Okay, I know that this is more of a Hugh thing, but I just need to say this now. He's a doctor that didn't believe in that.
No, that's
and
fair.
And just accept it.
Well, remember, Star Trek 3 kind of set up that it was, the Cutra was a very Vulcan thing. That only they knew. We got an Alice in Wonderland reference.
Whoop,
whoop. Is it really Star Trek Discovery? We didn't get any eye imagery, but we sure did get some Alice imagery. Whoop, whoop.
And we did get some zooming CGI zoom through things, though.
I think it's time, Rachel, for the Hugh Dar. We've got to talk about Hugh. What's that? It's the Hugh Dar, the section of the show in which we talk about the character of Dr. Hugh Culber and how amazing he is, how much he contributes to the entire show, because this is a character on our first rewatch we scratched our heads at and said, wait, was this guy supposed to be an important character in the show? Oh, we must have missed that. Hopefully on that rewatch we'll see every single episode that he appears in that he's a major important character, one worth spending an entire episode resurrecting from the dead and celebration about him being back. He must have been a really important character. Maybe we missed on that first watch how essential Hugh was. Well, we got Hugh this episode.
One scene?
Two scenes, one of which he had dialogue. The second scene was just a quick insert shot of him checking his medical folder and nodding. What's that? Hugh fucking silently nodding and smiling? Whoa! That's unusual for Hugh. Is so not that type of character who just silently nods and smiles. It's not like he's a fucking background character that's glorified.
I thought that was an extra.
That was fucking you.
I genuinely thought that was an extra.
I think I'm getting real hatred for Hugh because I'm really, really noticing the fact that all he does is have a few lines of dialogue. He's not an essential character, yet the show later will play it like, oh, he was this big essential character.
Yeah, like he was really important to us.
We needed to resurrect him. So this episode, he has like two lines of dialogue.
Yeah.
And they're just medical exposition lines.
Yeah, he has medical exposition. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, he literally says like, I don't know. He's showing that he has no...
I have no idea.
He actually doesn't actually provide medical exposition, more so he provides the fact that he can't provide medical exposition. That's his exposition is, I cannot provide medical exposition.
Yeah, we've done these things and we still don't know what's going on. And then she wakes up and explains
and she's like,
everything.
This is
and,
it. And he's like...
Soul graft. And he's like, okay.
He's like, okay.
And then she's just released.
He just nods and smiles.
Like, there is no discussion about her being medically fit to go on that mission.
Well,
or
it's
to
because
leave
he's a terrible, 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 terrible,
terrible,
horrible doctor. As well as partner. As I said last episode, he's a terrible partner.
Perhaps. Do you think that? One,
the episode itself brings up the fact of how is Lorca still in the commander's chair.
Yes.
But that's fine, because Lorca's the kind of guy who pushes people around, yeah, and Hugh's a bit of a pushover.
And we've discussed...
That's fair enough. Here's the thing about Hugh that's so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, he does so little in this episode that it brings into question things that he should have done in the interim of episodes.
Yes.
We brought it up with Paul. How on earth is this man medically fit to be at work? It is clear by just looking at his behavior. It's not just a personality change. He is clearly being heightened in a way that isn't just his emotions. He comes across as high.
Yeah.
And the next episode will really, really play into that fact. How can him, as a medical doctor... And as a partner, knowing that this person has performed eugenics on themselves, how can they let him keep serving? Lorca himself seems perplexed at the fact. So it's not as if Lorca has said to Hugh in the interim, no, I don't care if you don't think he's medically fit. I think he's fit. Put him on board.
Lorca seems perplexed and confused. No, they don't do anything. They don't say anything. There's no establishment that he needs to be continually monitored or have him check in. We just get told that he's been acting weird.
And we see he's acting weird.
And we see he's acting weird.
And the fact that Lorca, the captain...
But that's just because he's there for that scene.
Yep.
If we didn't need him for that mind meld scene, we wouldn't see Stamets this episode.
Yeah, until next episode.
And we wouldn't know that people are noticing that he's acting weird. It would just be from A to Z in one jump.
In fact, anything, this episode... cripples that even more than the next episode. We know that Hugh is with him and he's like, oh, he's changed or whatever, you know, tell the audience, but that's fine. But in this episode, the fact that this appearance exists really is just proving that Hugh is a terrible, terrible, terrible doctor and a terrible partner. I do not know how this man was allowed to serve. The fact that Lorca showed concern and expressed it in a manner that this was new to him indicates that even in the interim it wasn't as if Lorca had deemed it worthy that he still serve. It shows that Hugh, the medical doctor, has deemed it worthy.
I have no idea.
So is it a yum or a yum yum?
It's a yum. I was bored. I think that's the thing. Like, as good as the Lorca stuff is, and I think that's a yum-yum.
Yum-yum.
It is one of those episodes in which I say to myself, who does this serve?
Mm-hmm.
People who have seen the original Star Trek shows will get annoyed, most likely, more so than not, at the characterization of Sarek and the self-inserted importance of Michael to the character of Spock, thus the legacy of Star Trek. And then there's just so much that's left to people who haven't seen those shows before or don't know anything about Sarek to be like, well, what's the investment there? Oh, because they like Michael and is that enough? Maybe that is enough. But to me, it isn't. And it's one of the confounding things where I just don't know who this audience is for. Like, who is the audience for this is really confounding to me in episodes like this.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, bored, 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 bored. I was bored the first time, bored the second time. And the fact that that did not change really just kind of speaks volumes about how this episode, you really could remove it. Other than the Cornwall, whatever, getting captured. And then setting up the scars on Lorca's back. There's really nothing... This episode is furthering plot-wise. It's character-driven episode, and since I find the character-driven stuff boring, you could remove it, honestly. So it's a yum.
Yeah, I was walking in feeling okay about this episode, and...
Then we talked about it?
Yeah, now I'm just angry, so it's a yum from me too. tell us what we're going to subject ourselves to next.
Well, we're going to subject ourselves to, spoiler alert, the episode that I remembered the most fondly out of all of the episodes of Star Trek Discovery, episode 7 of season 1, Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad. And the episode description is, as the USS Discovery crew attempts to let loose at a party, an unwelcome visitor comes aboard, bringing about a problematic and twisted sequence of event. Ooh. I don't know why it says problematic, but sure. It reminds me of Scotty that one time of where he says, "Aye, sir, that's problematic." Like, there's an episode where he does say the phrase, "Aye, that's problematic."
That's problematical, sir.
Where can people find us?
Where? Do people want to find our home?
Yeah, you know what I'm asking you. Where can people find us online?
On the social medias, we are Yum Yum Pod. If you want to shoot us an email, that's yumyumpod@gmail.com.
Did you say, if you want to shit us an email?
Shoot is what I meant to say. I don't know if
like
I said...
Like shoot as in a gun or shoot as in like I put it down a shoot...
Shoot as in a gun, shoot off an email, cool. Bang, bang.
Just a quick question. Is that the correct use of shoot, like shoot us an email, like bang, bang, or shoot as in like a laundry shoot?
Well,
I'm questioning this.
Okay, so I would say shoot as in like a gun, it's
bang, bang.
The bullet being projected.
Right.
Whereas a shoot, S-H-U-T.
U-T-E?
Is like the barrel contain where you can...
But I think
the
shooting
the
mail, like a mail shoot, that's what I think. You're looking at me like, shit, I didn't think about that.
I don't know.
If you want to shoot us an email, what is the email address? I didn't hear it before. I was thinking about shit. I interrupted our promos. We're on the social medias. Follow us there. We got an email.
This is how
email
exhausted
us.
I am after this. Yes, yumyumpod@gmail.com. Also, just take a look in the description and it should give you the links for wherever you want to find us.
Yeah, we're on all the podcatchers available. Rate, review us, share us around. Really boost us up because
we're a lonely
little Star Trek podcast in the sea of emptiness where there are no other Star Trek podcasts. There are no podcasts that talk about a little known franchise known as Star Trek. We have a Patreon as well. That's in the description. We have some fun extra bonus content there in which we talk about Star Trek. We talk about other television shows. Fun extra little tidbits. That is there as well. You can support us on there. Rachel, it was a journey and a half to talk about this episode, which at first I was like, it's going to be a pretty simple discussion. And then we went on the tangents, we had our nitpicks, but at the same time, I think this episode did offer up some meaty thoughts. I feel bad about giving it a yum, but at the same time, not really.